Hey friends, this episode does include discussion of nihilism, meaninglessness, and suicide. If you or someone you know is experiencing suicidal thoughts or a crisis, please reach out immediately to the Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 988 or go to 988lifeline.org. Please listen with care.
Welcome to Ravel, a roundtable show about how faith gets complex with the vast amount of information at our fingertips.
For some people, this complexity has caused the unraveling of their faith, and for other people, it's been liberating. Take us, for example. I'm Steven.
I'm Josh.
And I'm Emily. We each grew up in different parts of the American Christian spectrum, and as some of our beliefs migrate, we still feel like our theology is in process. Theology always has fundamentally been and will always be an exploratory dialogue.
That alone is proof that faith raveling doesn't have to be a crisis, even if it feels like it. We don't have all the answers, so we want to use this show to model what it can look like to genuinely sort through beliefs in real time.
So share a drink with us as we pull on the thread of our own pressing questions. Thanks for listening.
Buongiorno, my little Italian buddies. Actually, I don't know if either of you are Italian. I'm not. What are you guys
buongiorno.
Drinking?
Buongiorno.
Dixie is.
I'm not Italian.
Oh, buongiorno to Dixie.
Yeah. Jeremiah Johnson, Scotch Ale, right here. Boom. Mountain Man.
The Mountain Man.
Beautiful. King of Beers. It's the best. I know there's an actual beer that uses that as their marketing thing, but it's actually true about this one. So come at me, Coors or Miller or Bud. I don't remember which one.
Bills is king of beers.
Doesn't matter. Emily, what are you drinking?
Clearly not memorable marketing.
Nope. Obviously.
Emily, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking water, but not just any water. This is water from my Wyoming District Mountain Sky Conference water bottle. I got
cool.
Gear.
Oh, so it is water.
My church.
It is just water. I thought you were going to say I brought this water from the drinking fountain at the...
No.
That's what I thought too. I thought you were going to say this is water from the Wyoming Cody Municipal
it's
Township water source.
Super filtered water because I can't drink town water. Fun fact.
Oh, no, nobody should.
Town water
no
nowadays.
Matter where, I'm from Seattle and I drink filtered water exclusively.
Correct.
It's delicious.
You just got to figure out a way how to minimize your plastic use, reduce, reuse, recycle.
There's plenty of great filter options, even for the home.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to sell you on them, but
pitchers, yeah, like Brita filters and stuff
just
like
not
that.
The Berkey's. The Berkey's are not good. Do not buy those.
Or you can get those 5-gallon jugs with the little dispenser, right?
Yeah.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Just refill those at the grocery store.
I'm a Brita boy, for the record.
Great.
Brita boy.
Is that what you're drinking tonight, Josh?
No, thank you for the asking, though. I'm drinking a Reed's Extra non-alcoholic ginger beer, which Steven did catch me coughing on it as I was entering back into the studio. And
that's because it's the good
stuff.
It
is the strong stuff. It is the good stuff. It's non-alcoholic, but my tum-tum has not been good the last 24 hours, and I need this.
Oh, boy.
I'm still feeling I'm feeling great right now, but I need to have this right now.
Some soothing bubblies.
Oh, bubblies.
Speaking of studio, minor announcement for the patrons. We have a new perk that just dropped, if you can call it that.
It's a perk.
We are officially going to start dropping video versions of the unedited podcast on the Patreon. So you can go watch our beautiful faces talk at you and each other because we're doing that now. And it's fun. And you know, it's surprising. Like, if you're new to the show, we did not record on video before until like, what, 5 or 6 episodes ago?
Yeah,
and it really
truly
does change the dynamic, especially if you're not constantly like making.
Can you tell, listener?
I don't know if you can tell, but it feels like it changes the dynamic to us, which is great. As long as you're not like constantly making references to what you're like showing each other, like you're not also making an audio show. But if you would like to go watch our faces and see us in our jammies or our houseware and in our little home studios, you can go watch us now. Watch our episodes if you want to feel like you're watching us on YouTube or something.
Yeah.
Have you ever thought, I want to see what this guy's face looks like because I'm so familiar with his voice. And then you see a photo or a video and you're like, that's not what I imagined. I actually hate knowing what his face looks like. You can have that experience by subscribing to our Patreon at patreon.com/ravelpod for as little as $3 a month.
Yeah, it's a joy.
Has that happened to you though? Like you see it like a live show of a pot like
so many times.
I went to the McElroy brothers for the first time in San Diego a few years ago, and I was like, I've seen pictures of them. I know what this is going to be like. And then I saw them like talk with their mouths, and I was like, no, I'm not, no.
I do not need to see their tongues.
I don't like
Thank
this.
You. I will just close my
this
eyes.
This is now. Uncomfortable. I just want a podcast experience.
My first recollections of that was with K-Love hosts. Because I would hear them all the time and be like, I love their voices. I'm like, I have this picture in my head of what they look like.
Uh-huh.
Nowhere close. I was never close.
Never. 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 It is kind of a cool feeling, though, when you get it right. When you see a video and you're like, actually, I was pretty close. Pretty spot on.
That tracks, yeah.
Yeah.
And you can go even a step further and you can rank. You can be like, oh, yes, we know who the most good-looking is out of this bunch.
Steven always has the best hair day of the three.
You do.
Steven clearly has the best hair day, yes.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm gratified. Thank you, for that compliment.
I don't have a segue.
Do we need one?
For today's topic. But no, we don't need one. But the generator generated one of my questions. And my question to you two is, how do we deal with or escape nihilism?
Boom, there
you
it is.
You don't. That's my short.
End
of episode.
That's
bye, y'all.
Short answer.
Emily, do you want to wrap us up?
Great. What's your benediction? Let's go make a bonus episode, shall we?
Bye, Felicia.
Wait, Emily, did you give a quick answer? I missed it.
No,
did.
I did not.
Oh, okay,
I don't have a quick answer. I have to really stew on this.
I would love to
what
hear.
What beef do you have with nihilism?
Me?
Yeah. Why do you want to escape it? Why do you want
okay,
to avoid
so
it?
Okay, so I'm actually interested to hear. I have some follow-up questions, but I would be interested to hear how each of us personally reconcile it or get over it or whatever. I think that the hearing people's personal takes on it is actually very relevant.
Yeah.
So Steven feels very quick to answer. He cannot escape nihilism.
I don't.
Says the Ayn Rand stan.
Whoa, excuse me.
I don't
me.
Actually know if that's one of Ayn Rand's things or not. I have no idea.
No. Well,
I have no idea.
No. I just think you don't. And I think religions who pretend that we can are lying to you.
Ooh.
Can you give an example?
Okay.
Ecclesiastes much? The whole thing exists to give the Jewish people freedom to feel nihilism. Mm. Checkmate.
I'm in a mood today.
I think that's a legitimate take, honestly. So would you say, though, that you, as now an atheist, firmly, has that changed your view about nihilism or, like, meaning in the world or, like, how you deal with it?
Maybe a little bit. I'll be honest.
Or maybe you're still thinking about it.
Well, I think we shared it on my book reel that we put out forever ago when we were on social media and especially on TikTok.
Oh, yeah.
One of the books that really changed my thinking a few years ago was Albert Camus' The Myth of Sisyphus, where he pretty much just brings a philosophical postmodern take to the experience of nihilism. Unfortunately, it does kind of come down to the classic philosopher's take of if life is meaningless, you should either kill yourself or figure out how to not do that. And his speaking about it and his talking about it in a really weird way just kind of gave me freedom to, how do I want to say this? It's part of the human experience to feel so infinitesimally small that maybe life is meaningless and worthless. But what you choose to do with it, he says that you should embrace the absurdity of life
and just hold on to it.
And as a Christian, when I read that, I was like, yeah, but I think I maybe have a better answer. I still maybe think his answer is lacking a little bit, but the inspiration that comes from just saying, right, it's the story of Sisyphus. Like, he is cursed to push a rock up a hill just to watch it roll down again. And he does a lot of really poetic writing about, like, and Sisyphus learned to love his rock and learned to love every cycle of the ups and the downs. And if you learn to just accept that, it's almost a little bit of like a Buddhist kind of like just like melt into it kind of idea of just like accept it. You're along for the ride. I'm not selling it as much. I can tell looking at your faces, and the patrons can tell if they're watching it on the Patreon right now. But I don't know. I just don't think you do escapism.
So you would view that as a dealing with it more than like an escapism.
Maybe coping.
Coping, sure.
Oh, coping, sure. Compromising.
And you feel like that view works for you, I'm guessing, more or less.
Yeah, I think for me, the way it's more personally manifested is understanding what my like locus of control really is in my life, and understanding while I can feel fear or nihilism about name any political issue going on in our world, name any war, name any climate change, you know, all these things that are big and existential and like global questions, to a degree, like history is way more full of people who couldn't do anything about it, but could and did choose to simply maximize the joy in their own life by connecting richly with what is directly around them.
Yeah.
That's kind of where I'm coming from. Stoic. It's giving stoic.
It
I totally recognize
stoic.
That.
But not in a bad way. It's not.
Yeah.
It's not an arrogant. You know, it's.
I don't know actually, if it's the best actually, gospel to preach. I'll be honest. It works for me. It works really well for me right now.
Well,
catch me in a few years.
And
who knows?
What's wrong with that? Yeah, that's okay. At least you're honest.
Yeah.
You know?
And read Ecclesiastes straight up. Like the post-wisdom wisdom of Ecclesiastes, having enjoyed the richness of the ups and downs of the Psalms and like the pre-wisdom wisdom of the Proverbs, to get to a spot in Ecclesiastes where you can like hold all that at the same time and also be like, and also, what the fuck are we doing here? I actually love that that is included in the Hebrew Bible.
Amen.
So what do you think? Do you still want to escape it?
Me?
Yeah.
I think...
What are you running from, Josh?
I think it's very good to escape meaninglessness. And I think of nihilism as like... I don't think this is the official like philosophical definition, but like I think of nihilism as like an outright pessimism against the world and everything in it. And I feel like that's different than just something being like without meaning in the moment. Like obviously we ascribe meaning to things.
Yeah.
But like I think of nihilism as like it's almost narcissistic in a way, I think, in that like it feels really focused on like I can't do anything to stop any of this.
Yeah.
Hmm.
It could also push you straight into like solipsism. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, can you define solipsism for me again? I always forget what it is.
Solipsism is the true and intent belief that you are the only real experiencing person in the simulation.
Oh yeah, that's right.
That you are the only real thing. I think nihilism could take you there too.
That's a very tippy scale.
Yeah, isn't it?
So I think I escape nihilism by leaning into meaninglessness.
Oh.
Like in the absurdity, like Peter Rollins talks about this a lot, like the absurdity of life and like some of the like psychology of what it means for something to be absurd or like for something in you to be absurd.
Camus, like, right there.
Yeah, yeah. And he's absolutely building off of some of those like older thinkers. And like, I actually think absurdity is like rife with meaning. Like that's why satire hits so fucking hard when it's good. Like when it's good, it's so fucking good. It's like on the nose. It's making an incredible point. It's like prophetic. And like, I think absurdity is like where it's at. Yeah. So I think that like, I really like the idea of surfing the absurd between meaning and meaninglessness. I think that that helps me escape nihilism. Like whether it's like just being funny in the moment or like thinking about like how to topple something that I think shouldn't exist. Or just like trying to like reframe a conversation or the way people like look at something. Like I think that like a lot of the different projects I've done, I felt very motivated to do because I felt like they were either like inherently or had the potential to really change something. And like I also think it's hard, like I've thought about like ego a lot in terms of like how it relates to that. And like I think that there's some pro and cons of like ego psychology. Like some of the like more like current Stoic thinkers love talking about ego, and I think it's a little overdone, honestly, which is kind of ironic. So like, I do think there's something to be said for like a selfishness versus a self. Actually, our couples therapist was giving us this distinction when we first started, like a difference in his mind in the psychology of like selfishness versus self-centeredness. Like self-centered just means you're like focused on yourself versus like trying to like selfishly take away from others. And I think that's an interesting distinction. So I think that there is also that in terms of like when you are trying to affect the world for good. And I also think that like I've been very optimistic for a long time. Like I like to think of myself as a very optimistic person. And I think that in general, I think the world tends to get better over time, even though there's a lot of shit that happens too.
Growing pains.
Yeah. Well, as one of my friends said a while back, like Louis XIV would have fucking killed an entire country for a fridge. And we just have them. And like, I really do think that the world becomes a better place. But I think that it's like those absurdists that really drive that forward. Like it's the people that like break us out of a status quo. And then history more or less forgets sometimes that like actually drive more meaning to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I think people that are more motivated towards making the world a better place inherently breaks nihilism versus like the hopelessness of like, I can do nothing, which is true, but also you can do anything you're going to do.
So maybe I conflated narcissism or geez, Freudian slip much. Maybe I conflated nihilism with just that hopelessness. Because I liked the way you said like,
well, I think it is hopeless.
But the outright pessimism angle, I think both you and I are speaking to like, no, you actually can leave that behind. You can actually escape that. So maybe I was getting my terms backwards.
Emily?
But yeah.
What about you? No, I think you're on the money.
Well, first, I don't even know if this is going to answer your question, but I think there's meaning in literally everything. I do. And you know me, like, you know that's what I was going to say. And I think we can escape nihilism when we don't make it about us. We focus on other people's meanings. And I've especially learned this as a parent. Like, my kid hands me something and she has a twinkle in her eye and it does something to her that to me I could give two shits about. It, at that moment, does not have any meaning to me. But to my 2-year-old, almost a 3-year-old, it means the world to her. And that gives me meaning. Even if it doesn't make sense to me, we don't have to be on the same page. But that gives me meaning. And so you escape it by not trying to make it about your meaning, like why it has to have meaning to you. It just has meaning. Because to someone it has meaning, and that is life-giving, and that should account for something. Because people matter.
Do you think that different generations or different... I'm just going to throw both questions out here. Do you think different generations or people of different faiths in general tend to deal with nihilism differently?
Yes.
That was a quick yes. What are you thinking of?
So, like, right now, we're doing a Bible study from cover to cover. And it's great. Because we've been having some very interesting stories of, like, Noah being drunk and lying naked for all to see. And, you know, now we're getting into the boring, quote-unquote, stuff of the building of the tabernacle and the vestments of the priesthood. And, like, no one wants to read that, right? And it's like, but those matter to the Jewish people.
The symbols embedded in the construction of the tabernacle tent.
You know?
Yeah.
That had meaning for someone.
Yeah.
For that group of people. Absolutely. To people outside of it? Hell no. And it's very evident when I look around the room at my peers in the Bible study and they're like, why should we care?
How
like,
many cubits of what?
What's a cubit? That was exactly the question that someone asked today. And I'm like,
awesome.
You're missing the point. Like, and I think especially too with generations, if you think about what happens to a group of people, either done to them or done by them, that has meaning on either side. And that totally matters. And we can't escape that. We can't. That's just a part of life.
We just want to say how honored we are that you listen to Ravel. Seriously, there's a lot of great shows out there, and we're grateful to be in your feed. Thank you for helping us on our journey to normalize people asking questions about theology.
If you want to support what we're doing, the best way to help is to tell a friend about us.
We want to be a resource for people on their faith journeys, whether they're deconstructing, reconstructing, switching churches, deconverting, and everything in between.
And if you're able, you can support us for as little as $3 a month on our Patreon. Supporting us helps us cover fees, software, equipment, future ideas, and more. For all of you church finance skeptics out there like me, don't worry, we're keeping an open book for transparency.
For our supporters, we've built an online space where we can be together. We know it can be difficult to ask questions about our faith, so we want to make that more accessible, comfortable, and normal. We're using an app called Discord, where you'll get private access. You already know us, and we'd love to get to know you.
Thank you to everyone who's already supporting, and thank you to Louis Zong for the use of our theme music, In Full Color. So Josh and I are fully sold on more meaninglessness than anything. And Pastor Emily shows up saying, no, no, no. It's truly the exact opposite.
I think that that's a, I like the way you're framing that, Emily, because I feel like to answer my own question, I feel like what I have seen a lot of is a lot of Christians act like atheists and other people of other non-Christian faiths just have no hope. They just live hopeless lives. They hope for nothing. They have meaning in nothing. And like, that just feels like such a like devoid of humanity view to me.
That is not life-giving.
That's because those same Christians are also the people proportionally in the world who are most obsessed with afterlife.
Also true. I also think it's possible to believe in something that has ultimate meaning and recognize that like other people still have meaning.
Correct.
And other things still have meaning. Like that just feels so absurd to
even
me,
just like
in a bad way.
Down to the power of myth for different cultures at different times in
absolutely
the world.
Absolutely.
But truly, there's something to the nihilism being, because that's actually how your question struck me immediately, Josh, was I guess you escape nihilism by going to heaven or like having a hope in an afterlife. And in that way, I'm actually kind of sold on the ego language of like, that's because we're addicted to our ego and we think our ego is going to be the experiential thing that continues to experience in heaven because we can't deal with the, like, nihilism is where philosophers go to take it to the extreme because the majority of the people, the masses, can't even handle death well. What do you think of that?
I think that's really interesting, actually. I do think nihilism is a very extremist view, actually.
But is it possible someone like Camus takes that in almost a satirical way to, because of course there are philosophers riddled throughout the ages who truly thought that the pinnacle of their art was ending their own life because that was them living truly consistently with what they were writing about and what they thought about the world.
Sure.
But is it possible someone like Camus takes that and in a satirical way, because he's talking about the absurd, his whole thing is about the absurd. Is it possible he's saying like, yeah, of course the conclusion is kill yourself, but he's almost saying it with like and I dare you, you know?
Sure, yeah.
I don't know.
Generationally, I feel like I've seen people talk about like how there's this commonality now between the stereotypes of boomers and also Gen Z. In that, like, they both, like, have, across, like, generally, obviously a stereotype, but, like, there's this phenomenon where both groups are, like, arriving at, like, a fatalist view that I think is nihilistic, where, like, but, like, the boomers are, like, I think more likely to fall prey to, like, a golden age bias, like, the world's getting so much worse, it used to be so much better.
Back in my day.
Back in my day. Versus the kids, like, in a weird way, they're like blaming each other too, which I think is really weird. And I don't really see that too much personally, but I feel like I see a lot of this online. And obviously it's a stereotype and not everyone thinks that way, yada, yada. But like, I think that it's really interesting to see that like really the newest generation of adults and the oldest current generation that's most alive have this really nihilistic view of the current world and the future of the world. And that feels really terrible to me. Like, I get feeling hopeless around an issue or like not knowing like how to move something and like feeling powerless to affect change. Like if you're like, oh my god, the elections are coming up again, oh my God, the options suck. Oh my God, it didn't work last time. Like, who do I even, does it even matter anymore? Which I think those moments of like hopeless questions are like good to interrogate, but like it feels really incomplete if people are just like arriving at hopelessness and letting themselves stay, like do nothing with it.
I think it's always going to be inherent with generational shift that the older generations are typically going to be more like lower C conservative in the sense that they're thinking about their past and tradition and heritage and all that. And newer generations, the younger ones, more agile, are very often thinking way more about the future. So like the difference between a boomer saying like back in my day, we used to have it so good and you don't know what it was like coming out of World War II and the Cold War and we were scared and this is how we coped. And the Zoomers are being like, I don't care what your life was like. You're handing me a world with how many degrees increased because of climate change, because of all the shit we put in the atmosphere, because of what you wanted, two cars in every driveway and a chicken in every pot. Like, really? That's the gift you think you're giving us? Like, think about the future, though.
I think the irony of like both fatalistic views is the world has gotten better.
Yes.
Like, do you remember people talking about the ozone layer?
Mm-hmm. We healed it.
We
did it.
It was near catastrophic and it got healed.
And they said it wouldn't be done either. They said there's no reverse.
Did you know that I just recently listened to a podcast of a search engine where they were talking about where did all the cockroaches go? Because like all of the like Gen X people remember cockroaches being like constantly present in their childhood, especially in urban areas.
That's so true.
And they accidentally killed most of the roach population. So like the roach populations of today are like few and far between now compared to like what they used to be 30 years ago. It's a great episode. But like it was like an accidental improvement, basically. Like everyone was trying to solve it and then it just happened and then like you don't hear about it anymore. I really get like how the news cycle
catastrophizes.
Yeah. And like I think that that's one of the reasons why I feel like I get overwhelmed listening to a ton of news because like it really does have such a negative focus because of the nature of news. Versus like the things that actually improve, you don't notice them because they happen over time and they happen through like small discoveries and implementations. And
that's a huge bit of Steven Pinker's book, Enlightenment Now, that I just read a few months ago.
Ooh, I don't know about that.
He's kind of one of the famous new atheists, I guess, but like of like the Sam Harris and Richard Dawkins guys. But
don't give that guy a banana.
His book.
It's the atheist nightmare.
Yeah, that's kind of his the contention of his book. He's talking about enlightenment, what we got from like real scientific inquiry, the uncertainty that's truly like at the core of science, of like, yeah, we got it wrong. We're constantly trying to prove ourselves wrong. But in the process, look at all these things we gained, and truly like the improvements over so many dimensions of global issues. Trends continue to go in positive ways because we adapt.
I saw a really good interview from the Good Mythical folks. I think the series is called Last Dinner or something. Last Meal, with their chef Josh. And this episode was with Hank Green. And Hank pointed out that he thinks in the next 50 years even, more people will be dying with cancer than of cancer. And I thought that was a really interesting point because like even in my lifetime, I feel like I've seen the beginnings of that where like I remember growing up, cancer used to be like it felt like a death sentence because it was for a long time. And like my dad, for instance, has gone through now two remissions and like he never got close to the point of death that we know of, but like, I think that that's a really interesting example that, like, we have seen in our own lifetime of, like, this thing used to be, like, a significant death causer. And now it's, like, not really.
That's a good point.
So that's a good example from an atheist guy just talking about the metaphysics of science and all that. What do you guys think? I want to return us to this idea of nihilism versus afterlife, because I think there's something there. What are your thoughts?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that's the promise of a lot of religions, even beyond Christianity.
Yeah.
Huge component of Islam, some sects of Judaism. Buddhists are more enlightenment oriented, but Nirvana exists, apparently. So, you know.
I have an answer. I think it's still nihilistic.
Afterlife is nihilistic.
Yes. I think it is an optimistic nihilism.
Oh.
But to say that, like, the majority of the world will not be partaking in something, like, the majority of the world will be
dying.
You
need to be a universalist to truly. Is that what you're saying?
Then, like, therefore, like, amazing. Millions and billions of people's lives will be rendered meaningless.
Hmm.
No, it's not meaningless. They're the grapes that the Lord's foot is squashing in the press for us redeemed
yeah,
to enjoy.
Yeah, but,
the
like,
wine.
Isn't there some verse about, like their memory will be forgotten or something like that?
Yeah, but then, not like, after they're so the subject like, of wrath, baby.
Now you're making me think of grapes of wrath.
But that's... It is so fatalistic, though.
Yeah, it really has to do with, like, a minor elect, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're still stuck
with
that
idea. Yeah, and I think it's optimistic because, like, it's... the closest equivalent is like an escape planet. Like, that's what I don't like about the Mars thing.
Yeah.
Like, I've always been sus of Elon Musk, of him being like, yeah, we're going to go colonize Mars. And I'm like, bullshit. That's just like physical heaven that you're doing. Like, you're not trying to solve anything here.
It's futurist heaven. Yeah, for sure.
Yes, it totally is. And like, it feels nihilistic to me to be like, well, nothing we can do here. It's just some of us are going to live. Which, like, when it's not a life and death situation, feels like way too extreme.
Yeah, a little bit.
Not that climate change is not real. Very real. We have very real problems. But, like, nothing's unsolvable until it's, like, done. Emily, do you have anything interesting to think about the heaven question? I do think that was
an interesting one. Yeah, I think in regards to the afterlife, in a really bizarre way, it only applies meaning to the end. Like, it's all for nothing until then it suddenly has meaning.
That's a really good point, dude.
And that just to me does not make sense.
Wow. Yeah, because the kingdom of heaven is now, right?
So, like, how no meaning to suddenly all meaning? What? How? When? Why?
Dude.
And how do we know? No, how do we know? How do we actually
almost...
know?
No meaning until the end, until it does matter. That almost, okay, I think it was the last episode we were talking about, like, evangelical weddings, about how,
yes.
like, it's yeah. no sex until the wedding, and then it's like, oh, we're obsessed with.
It is.
That's kind of a corollary, right? Like, that's kind of how we, like, live that myth out in a different arena.
It doesn't make sense to me.
I also think it could be possible to believe in an afterlife and, like, believe in that, like, ultimate meaning or, like, the meaning that gives meaning to other things. I feel like there's got to be some, like, philosophical name for that. I think it's possible to believe in that and also believe that people who don't believe in that can still have meaning in things. Like, I think they can totally, like, you can find meaning in the mundane and the everyday and the helping of other people. Like, you can still value those things without having this, like, grand meaning of meaning.
Yeah, because who am I to attribute to someone's life it's meaningless unless you do A, B, and C? Like, why am I the person that gets to do that? Well, I'm not. So maybe all of y'all who think that need to be put back in your place.
Who put you in charge? Well, I guess you are the ordained one among the three of us, so you kind of are.
Yeah, but I'm like, I'm a sheep dog in the herd. Like, I'm not the top. I'm not the shepherd. Like, I still follow the flock.
I love that you talk about it like that. I am obsessed with one of my favorite genres of TikToks is the border collies in Scotland who just round up sheep.
Yes. It's beautiful.
Listen, I get a lot of Scotland stuff whenever I'm on TikTok with Dixie.
Maybe you should move there. I don't know. Before we do our last recs for the episode, I have one flash question.
Okay.
Who do you think is the most nihilistic person in the Bible? I think it's either Jonah or Abel. And I never thought about this until now, and I'm surprised I have never heard anyone preach on this. Abel saying that he is not his brother's keeper Jesus comes along and literally like says, love your neighbors yourself. So
Cain says he's not his brother.
Boom, roasted. Oh, I'm sorry, Cain. Yeah, wait.
Cain is the one who kills Abel.
Oh, you're right. Cain says that. That's
so are
right.
you thinking Cain? I was like, what's your reasoning on
I'm
Abel?
I'm thinking Cain. Yeah, sorry. Awesome. I meant Cain. Cain or Jonah. Mm-hmm.
Cain or Jonah.
Oh, boy.
I love the Jonah take because Jonah is satire. So that's kind of what we're talking about already.
Mm-hmm.
Boom.
And that is prophetic in itself.
Yes.
Man, I'm really tempted because of the way I've been talking about it. Judas. I think it's Judas.
Ooh, interesting. Mm-hmm. All right.
Sells himself out, doesn't see any hope of redemption for himself, so he takes matters into his own hands.
All right. Emily?
What if I said Jesus? Just kidding.
I knew you were going to say that.
No, I'm actually in Camp Stephen. Yeah.
Judas.
Though Jonah is a very, very close second.
All right. End of episode. What are you guys' recs for this week?
Whoa, okay.
I move us right along. I don't, unlike the Nihilists, I don't waste time. I don't know if they waste time. I don't know. We're all just wasting time on this rock. What are you guys' recommendations?
What do you got to plug? My recommendation is find some friends to play D&D with. Just do it. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Some of my most rewarding times with friends is telling stories together and improvising characters that don't exist, but that provide real meaning to us in our lives. It's awesome.
Amen. My recommendation is moving your body, whether it's walking, yoga, CrossFit, everything and anything in between. Because if there's anything I learned in this pregnancy, is that pain is real. And some of that pain can most certainly be alleviated if you just move your body. And give it some love. Give it a good rub, a gentle hug, and just move your body and feel life enter in you again, as we all need it.
My rec for this week is DIYing your own wedding, because that's what Elise and I are doing right now, and I 100% recommend it. I know there's a lot of takes out there, but if you are going to get married sometime in the future, I know Stephen and Emily, you already have, and I don't actually know if you DIYed much, but we're loving it. Is it work? Yes. But in particular, the tool, the app, Canva. We've been making our own invites, our own save the dates. We're going to like make some like flyers for the day of. And it's just A, so fun. And B, they make it so easy now. Like, I'm basically a graphic designer at this point. It's so easy. Like, there's a lot of, they have a lot of stuff in there now. It's not just clip art anymore, boys and girls. There's a lot you can do. And it's pretty effective and affordable. So shout out to Canva for sponsoring my wedding unofficially. Emily, do you want to, not to be a nihilist, but do you want to end all of the things that are in this episode? Just end it all.
Goodness, that just was sudden and abrupt.
Like death that's coming for us all.
As a friend, though. We greet death as a friend. So I don't even know why I was inspired by this, but my child has a Care Bear that prays, so it like brings its paws together and it recites prayers. And this is one that my child absolutely loves. And it's obvious that it has meaning to her because she can start to recite it a bit. And I think it's just a good way for us to think about how even when the day ends and it's shit and you feel like there's no meaning, we do get a new day. And we don't know when the time is going to end where we run out of days. But we can at least look forward to the hope that there could be another day. So I'm going to try my sleepy voice. So let's see how this works. Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. Guide me safely through the night and wake me with the morning light.